Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. Coming up tonight, helping young people get a foot on the property ladder.
It's very difficult to envisage a young couple having more than 10% of the price of a house as a deposit. And at present, they're being required to come up with something like 20%.
A necessary intervention or a bubble in the making? It's our late debate tonight after the news, which is read now by Eileen Whelan.
Good evening. The Taoiseach Enda Kenny has said nobody could complain about the children being cared for by the Jack and Jill Foundation benefiting from the severance payment of the former Minister for Justice, Alan Shatter. He announced today his decision to donate the €70,000 ministerial payment to the charity which cares for sick children. Speaking to reporters in Dublin, Deputy Shatter also denied suggestions that he might resign his Dáil seat after stepping down as Minister earlier this month over the controversy surrounding his handling of complaints of the misconduct. He was the last minister to be entitled to the payment. The Fianna Fáil spokesperson on justice, Niall Collins, has said the Taoiseach was losing credibility because the government had introduced legislation to end ministerial severance payments. Sinn Féin's Angus O'Snoddig said the bill to end the payments should have been signed into law sooner, but he welcomed the donation being made to the Jack and Jill Foundation. The independent TD, Finian McGrath, questioned the use of public money to fund the charity.
I think it's a stunt because I think it's public money, it's taxpayers' money, and organisations like Jack and Jill should get proper funding because they're under pressure constantly.
The Health Service executive has issued a warning about drugs believed to be connected to the deaths of four people in the last 4 weeks. One of the deaths happened in Dublin, two in the southeast, and one in the Midlands. The HSE is also investigating if there's any link between the deaths and the hospitalisation of a number of students in Dublin last week. It's believed the incidents are the results of taking green pills with an Apple or Rolex symbol. Meanwhile, a man in his 20s has been arrested following the seizure of drugs during a search in Dublin. Ecstasy, LSD, herbal cannabis and cocaine with an estimated street value of €1,000 were found in an apartment in Phibsborough this afternoon. Cash, mobile phones, weighing scales and other items associated with the supply of drugs were also recovered. The weather forecast, cloudy and misty tonight with showers heavy and prolonged in places. The showers will become scattered later with lowest temperatures 6 to 9 degrees. There's a warning that northerly winds will occasionally reach gale force for a time tonight on coasts from Mizenhead to Slinehead to Malinhead. And that's all for now. News again on Radio 1 at 11. But now it's back to the late debate.
Eileen, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to the programme. And tonight we're debating the government's plan to make it easier for first-time buyers to get a mortgage. They say it's an effort to kickstart house building and create up to 60,000 jobs in construction. All the details haven't been worked out yet, but it's thought a portion of the mortgages will be guaranteed by the state so that the banks can give out more loans. First-time buyers will buy two- or three-bedroomed new houses with smaller deposits and a mortgage worth up to 95% of the value of the home. This was the Finance Minister, Michael Noonan, talking about the plan last week.
It's very difficult to envisage a young couple having more than 10% of the price of a house as a deposit. And at present, they're being required to come up with something like 20%. So we're examining it. It would be only for new houses now, not for the second-hand market. And it would be for first-time buyers. And it would be temporary in nature. So we're working out the details of it between now and the finance bill. But in principle, yeah, we think it's a good idea as a supply-side initiative. We're a long way from a housing bubble here. What we need is more houses. Social housing, I don't think that's what the main market wants. Obviously, there will be some social houses built. And even today's announcement by Brendan Howland has allocated money for social housing. But the bulk of the houses required in the cities, and particularly in the greater Dublin area, are 3 and 4 bedroom houses that will be built by private builders. And in a lot of occasions, having a high deposit and then trying to access a mortgage is preventing people.
Could this measure put a cap on prices, or will it drive them up?
I don't think it would have that effect. First of all, I don't think it would be the generality of the market. I think it would be a portion of the market. But you could see it as an assistance to young people who are in apartments, who have a deposit, who want to move. Once private sector builders know that there is demand supported by money, well then I think the building of estates will start again. I think by the autumn there'll be significant house building in Dublin.
That was the Finance Minister, Michael Noonan. So is this a necessary intervention at this moment in time, or is it a bubble in the making? With me in studio tonight, Labour Senator Aideen Haydon, who's also a member of the Oireachtas Finance Committee. Peter Stafford is Director of Property Industry Ireland. Sheila Killian from the Kemi Business School at the University of Limerick. And from London, we're joined tonight by financial commentator Louise Cooper. You're all very welcome indeed. Peter Stafford from the Property Industry Ireland. Is this a good idea?
It's an unusual idea. It's a very strange idea, given that there's a fairly clear consensus that the problem in the market is one of supply rather than demand. We saw in 2005 and 2006 a real building boom. We built a huge number of houses, more than demographics would have told us we needed. But since then, we've seen very few houses being built. We've seen very few developers active. We've seen very few individual houses being built. And what we're dealing with now is a crisis of supply. We've seen house prices increase massively. We've seen a huge amount of competition for houses, especially in the urban areas. We see anecdotally people talking about queues outside onto the street at viewings. In a report out a couple of days ago, which we in Property Industry Ireland worked with Sherry Fitzgerald and AIB on, we interviewed potential buyers, and they were saying the problem in the market is there's too many people chasing too few houses. So to come along and make it easier for people to buy houses seems to me to be looking at the supply-demand equation from the wrong side. It's making it easier for people to buy things which don't exist at the moment. It would seem to me to be a better solution to say, how do we speed up the supply of property?
But won't this stimulate the building of houses? If banks start to lend mortgages to people who want to buy, then there will be houses to be built by the construction industry.
Yes, but that's a second round effect. The first round effect is that there is money in people's pockets for mortgages. The second round is the building. What we've been looking for, and I think what makes sense, is we just go straight to the problem, which is why are we not building houses? And again, we in Property Industry Ireland, we surveyed our members to find out what the problem is. And it seems to be an issue of finding available sites on which to develop, the planning process, delays in planning, and the difficulty in developers finding finance. Now, if we can get the financial side sorted, and I think the banks do seem to be starting to loosen up to give money to developers, if we can get that sorted, then the issue remains one of planning. And that's where the delay is. We have a very complicated, very slow planning process. We've got actually a very efficient construction industry. And when the tap needs to be turned on, putting a brick on top of another brick to build a house is actually quite straightforward. It's the complexity and the difficulty in getting a viable development to the point of construction. That's the problem. And I think we could short circuit a lot of the debate that the minister's talking about there by looking at that supply side problem, short circuiting it. And the way I often try to think of it is unpicking the knot. What are those knotty issues which are stopping development taking place? And how do we unpick them so that when there is a viable project, it goes to construction?
OK, and we will explore in greater detail potential other solutions a little bit later in the programme. But if we stick with this mortgage guarantee scheme, this insurance, Aideen Haydon, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think this will stimulate supply?
Well, first of all, I think the debate is very premature, Audrey, to be honest with you, because there are 75 measures in the Construction 2020 document. And the document makes it very clear that, in fact, that this is very much something that is going to be put under economic analysis, and that there is no guarantee that this is actually going to come forward at all. We await an economic evaluation of this particular idea. It's based, I believe, on the Help to Buy scheme in the UK. Now, there's a lot of controversy over the Help to Buy scheme in the UK. I mean, some people have made the argument, and there's some evidence there, that it has actually helped the construction sector in the UK, and that there are quantifiable additional units that have been built because of the Help to Buy scheme.
And we'll hear from Louise on the British example in a moment. But as it stands at the moment, as outlined by Michael Noonan last week, do you think it will stimulate the supply of houses?
Well, I think the property market, as Peter has said, is a complex market. This particular document, Construction 2020, has a number of initiatives. Now, clearly, no one bit of this document can be taken in isolation. We must have an increase in supply. There's no two ways about that. But I do think there's an issue around who is getting access to housing at the moment and what we need to do to help first-time buyers. I mean, a lot of people probably don't realise that at the moment, the whole vista of Irish housing has changed dramatically over the last 10 years. We now have one in five of our families renting their housing from private landlords. This is back to the 1950s levels. You know, Irish people do have an aspiration to home ownership, and we've an entire cohort of people now, an entire generation, who have not been able to access home ownership.
So, do you think this mortgage insurance, this deposit insurance scheme, will help those first-time buyers?
I am very reluctant to say that. I do have concerns that it will, in fact, it may not be the correct mechanism. I believe that something will have to be done. It needs to be done in cohort with the increase of supply. But there has to be a recognition that at the moment, 50% of the people buying out there at the moment are cash buyers. And dare I say, many of them made their money during the Celtic Tiger years, parked it under the mattress, sometimes at the expense of other people who lost out. And they're now coming out, you know, into the market and buying up all around them. And I am very aware of the fact that there are many people in Ireland today renting their homes and paying very high rents who really want to see a future for themselves as homeowners. But I think that has to happen at the same time as we are looking at overall supply. And, you know, one of the things that concerns me is the fact that it's taken a long time for the public to come to understand that we have actually got an impending and, in fact, real shortage of housing in Ireland.
I should say, Aideen, at this point for our listeners, that you are chairwoman of the housing charity Threshold. So you're wearing that hat as well as being a member of the Oireachtas Finance Committee. But go ahead.
I mean, I do think it's taken a long time. And I know that, for example, we tried to highlight the impending shortage of supply. And we're seeing the evidence of that now at the moment in terms of the rising numbers of people experiencing homelessness. We tried to highlight that 2.5, 3, 4 years ago. And to be honest, we were laughed off the stage and told, what are you talking about? There's 200,000 empty units out there. Unfortunately, there has been a lack over a decade of joined up thinking in relation to construction, and we're paying the price for it now.
But do you think that this help to buy scheme, we'll call it that for shorthand, will it allow equality of access to housing?
One of the issues we have is, you know, unfortunately, I think the media have picked this out of the hamper of goods, so to speak, and they've really put a lot of focus on it when there's a lot of other really good things in that policy document. But, you know, just addressing the help to buy, for want of a better word, do I believe that particular model is something that we should consider? Yes, it's something we should consider. It's not new. Back in 2004, the National Economic and Social Council proposed something very similar to deal with the situation where people have actually got the money to pay a mortgage. They can afford to pay a mortgage. In fact, some of them are paying more money in rent than they would be paying in a mortgage, but can't get the capital together to be able to acquire a home. So it was considered in 2004. Events overtook us. Mm-hmm. Banks started giving 100% mortgages and so forth. So, you know, it has been looked at before. And in fact, before that, I mean, I'm a solicitor by profession back in the day. I worked in an era when it was totally normal for people to take out mortgage insurance, that if they didn't have a 90% debt to equity ratio, if it was less than that, or if they were in situations where they didn't have permanent and pensionable jobs, they took out mortgage insurance. This is nothing new.
There already is in place a mortgage indemnity guarantee for the banks.
Well, look, we can get into the kind of who owns what as far as the banks are concerned. But, you know, I'm trying to dispel the notion that there's something particularly new and innovative going on here. There actually isn't. Mortgage insurance is quite common. It was quite common in Ireland up until about the year 2000 when it fell out of favour as more money started coming into the system. Unfortunately.
But this is the state doing it.
Yes. Well, I think that's what we have to ask. You know, there's nothing cast in stone here. Should the state be doing it, or should the state be encouraging perhaps the insurance industry to do it? But there is an issue about people who have suffered because of the Celtic Tiger demise, who are in insecure employment, have lost secure employment. They want a future where home ownership is on the cards for them. And we do have to seriously give that consideration.
But they're either a viable and a reasonable risk, or they're not.
People are confusing this particular proposal. as being something that's giving people who shouldn't be getting mortgages because they can't afford them a chance to get a mortgage. That's not the case. Basically, this type of system or this type of scheme has to be stress tested. In other words, your ability to pay the mortgage is critical. It's your access to the deposit that's the issue. And as I said, in the past, that was dealt with by mortgage insurance. The issue for any viable scheme is the capacity of the individual to pay the mortgage. Now, quite obviously, a scheme like this would have to be aimed at a certain type of buyer. There would have to be a certain maximum ceiling on the kind of money that, you know, we don't want people to buy £1 million mansions. Let's get real here. We're talking about ordinary family homes. We're talking about stress testing the ability to pay, looking at very low European Central Bank rates at the moment. That's not going to continue. They'll have to be stress tested for 3-5% increases over the base rate and so forth. So, you know, really, you know, a lot of... Put it this way, there's been a lot of scaremongering about the people of Ireland having to pick up the tab for negative equity going forward. I think that's a little bit of a misrepresentation of this of this proposed. And let's just say it's proposed for an analysis.
Yeah, but as Kieran Ferry has pointed out on Twitter, that it was Michael Noonan who put the focus on the mortgage insurance scheme by talking about it before it was published. It wasn't the media who picked it up and focused on it.
Well, look, it's like this. You know, the report is very clear. It says it will be economically stress tested as to whether it's a viable product or whether it isn't. I personally believe that, you know, even if this does not work, and believe me, the Labour Party will not be going forward with something that's going to inflate the property market. Even if this doesn't go forward, we have to look at the situation of people who cannot access mortgages. And the evidence is there in front of us. You know, I see it every single day of the week. Even this evening, I met a couple who one of them is lost a job, is in contract employment. In fact, they're both in contract employment. They see no future for themselves renting long term. They want to get into home ownership. And, you know, we have to accept that, you know, we have got to recover from this crisis eventually. And that means people getting back to what they want, which is a secure home, not a home where they're facing a rent increase from a landlord in 6 months' time. And, you know, they're putting their children's names down for schools. They want to know where they stand. And Irish people have an aspiration to home ownership. It's a legitimate aspiration. And we have to look at how we can fulfil that aspiration.
OK, plenty in that to debate with our other guests. And I want to bring Louise in at this point. Louise, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good evening.
And the Help to Buy scheme has been in operation in the UK. Explain how it works and how the impact it's having.
Well, there's two ways the Help to Buy scheme. It was announced just over a year ago at last year's budget, and it has boosted, the construction industry and the broader housing market, the house prices. And there's two ways. There's one, an equity loan where the government lends 20% of the cost of a house, and that's for a new build home. And the other one's this mortgage guarantee where the government, and I think this is what is being proposed in Ireland, where the government gives the lenders, the lenders can come to the government and buy a guarantee which enables lenders to offer mortgages at higher loan to value, so sort of 80-95% loan to value, because the government is guaranteeing any loss if the people buying the property default and there's a loss, then the government guarantees it. So there's two ways it's worked. Now there's lots of speculation that it's driven London, it's created the housing bubble. If you actually look at the statistics, where the housing bubble is in the UK is London and the South East, predominantly London. But if you look at the data, the Help to Buy scheme is barely being used in London. It's being used in the north of England for very cheap property compared to sort of London. So I think what it's done is given a short-term boost, a boost of confidence, a kicker, and that's helped confidence recovery in house prices, and it's helped the construction industry get back on its feet. I think it's probably right. It's only temporary and short term, but it has achieved in the last year more confidence in the housing market.
So what's happening in London? Because I'm reading in the Financial Times that properties in London are selling for 25% more than their pre-crash peak.
I mean, London is just a completely and utterly crazy market. The valuations are utterly insane. Ordinary people, and even, to be honest, people who work in the city can barely afford a house anymore. One of the problems for London is we've had a global financial crisis. You haven't been able to, you know, where can you put your money that's safe? The view has become that London property is a safe place to put your money. So we have millionaires from all over the world thinking, I can't put my money in German government debt because it pays me nothing. I can't put my money into American government debt because it pays me nothing. Where is completely safe? I'll put it into London property. It goes up 20% a year. So we've had this massive rush of foreign capital into London, and that has been one of our primary problems for London property. You know, new developments get put up, and I'm not joking when I say sort of 70-80% of these new developments get bought by Asian buyers. So that is a particular weird London problem that doesn't reflect the rest of the UK housing market.
So from where you're sitting then, Louise, and you're listening to us over here putting a proposal forward, as we have with this mortgage insurance, what would you advise?
Well, I do think it's been a good thing for the UK, but the underlying problem, a bit like I'm hearing in Ireland, is supply. You know, the fundamental problem in the UK is we don't build enough houses. So this has been a sort of short term, it's given consumers more confidence because their house prices are going up, you know, well, you know, 10-15% in a year. So it's given consumers confidence. Some areas have got back to not quite peak levels, but the house prices are recovering strongly. So it's given a kick to consumer confidence. It's given a big kick to the construction industry that was on its knees 18 months ago. So we've now got people in construction jobs and building. So all of that's good, but it fails to address the underlying problem, which is we're not building enough houses. And I'm afraid, for various reasons, none of the politicians in our country are willing to really grasp the problem of we're just not building enough houses.
OK, Sheila Killian in Limerick. Sheila, you're very welcome as well to the programme as always. What do you make of what is being proposed or being talked about here at the moment? Is there an entire generation being squeezed out of the market? But as Aideen says, it will still come down to whether people can repay their mortgages.
Yeah, and Aideen is right to focus on that and focus on who is getting access to housing. But it's a funny, it's a weird kind of a thing that if you're worried about how people will repay their mortgages, that you're essentially encouraging them to take out a higher proportion of loan to the value of their house by requiring them to have a smaller deposit. I mean, certainly there are people who are struggling to get the deposit, but there is a social value in requiring deposits of about 10% and in having a lower loan to value, because the interest rates are on the floor, they will only go up. I know that it being said, you know, we'll have economic stress testing, but that's the job of banks. Governments make bad banks. You do, and if the banks won't lend without the deposit, why should the government? I mean, you do have very localised supply problems, and you have prices rising in Dublin. But like, if the UK experience, as described just now by Louise, is mirrored here, it'll boost the market outside Dublin rather than in Dublin, where the prices are higher. And it won't address the supply side problem. Like Peter is correct, it's a massively indirect way of going about increasing the supply of houses.
Aideen, what do you say to that?
I say, as I said earlier, I think, you know, the supply issue and the access to housing, they're issues that have to go hand in hand. I find it kind of, you know, worrying that we have put so much focus on banks as being the arbiters of who gets access to housing, when it's perfectly obvious when you look at the statistics that banks are not lending, and there's a certain amount of fiction going on. I mean, there's one particular lending institution who shall remain nameless who talk about 3 out of 4 loans being approved. Now, loans being approved are entirely different from loans being drawn down. Mm. Now, the same banks are turning around and saying, oh, it's all about supply. You know, the bottom line of it is, I have, you know, have the benefit of working on the ground, and I know very well that there are many situations when it's not about supply at all. It's simply about the banks trying to correct their balance sheets and simply not handing out the money.
Yeah, the supply problems are very localised, aren't they?
Well, it's not just about supply. I mean, I just have to say, Sheila,
there are supply problems.
I think there's a genuine issue with banks trying to lend their balance sheets. They're not being honest with their customers.
Absolutely.
They are simply... So I don't want banks, to be honest with you, to be the sole arbitrators of who gets access to housing.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what we're talking about here.
Could I make another point, and that is this. We will always have, an issue, and we have had over many decades, about access to housing finance. And, you know, it's often forgotten that local authorities had a very crucial role to play for low-income households in giving them access to mortgages.
That's still there. Yeah. The local authority annuity scheme is still there. It's just very, very low prices.
I think we need to actually revisit the
Completely
local authority
agree with
mortgage
you.
Scheme and look at how that can help low-income potential homeowners.
Excellent
it's
idea.
Very important to us
okay.
for that to
Louise,
happen.
You want in?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one thing that we did in this country is something called the Funding for Lending Scheme. And what it did is the Bank of England, our central bank, provided money to the banks, provided they then used it to lend to people wanting mortgages. And actually, there was much scepticism when the Funding for Lending Scheme was announced. But actually, again, it's worked quite well. And if you look at sort of fixed rate mortgages, they're actually at some of the cheapest levels we've seen in the last decade. So there are things that the central bank can do to hopefully, help get the banks lending to the economy. I don't know if that's something that Ireland has considered. Mm.
And Peter, I mean, if we just take the latest figures from the Irish Bankers Federation, they say that 3,425 mortgages drawn down in the first 3 months of this year, mortgage activity is up 65% on last year, according to them.
Yeah, and I think that represents wider activity happening in the market. But what's quite interesting is that our data on the market is still extremely poor. For example, we know who's taking down mortgages and we know whether they're first-time buyers trading up or trading down or wherever. But what we don't know, the 40% of people who are buying houses with cash, we just don't know anything about them because they don't appear in any of the statistics. So I think this is something that we need to remedy before we start talking about new mortgage facilities and mortgage availability. It's just our data on the market needs to be better. Who is buying the property? Where's the money coming from? And we heard the point earlier about people who are investing a huge amount of money in London property. We don't know that in Ireland. We just don't have that figures. Just on a slightly separate point, I think in this debate we're missing something fairly fundamental. We still have this idea that everybody in Ireland aspires to buying a home, which isn't true and hasn't been true for a long time. The Society of Chartered Surveyors Ireland commissioned a Red Sea poll last year and interviewed people about their choice of tenure, were they living in rental accommodation or had they bought, and where did they see themselves moving. And a huge number of people who were renting were quite happy renting. They maybe wouldn't stay in that same house, but they would move to a different place. They weren't saving for a deposit. They weren't putting money aside to save up. They were living in rental accommodation. And they quite liked it. So I think we need to think about people who are renting and happy renting, especially in a country like Ireland, where we have a greater number of people all the time who are working for multinational companies, who are maybe living in Ireland for a shorter
more
period.
More transient, exactly.
More transient, mm-hmm. And we need to make sure the accommodation exists for them as well as the notional homeowner.
Well, that's what one of our texters says. At this stage, people want security of tenure. They're not too bothered if they buy or not, Aidan.
Yes, that's true. There's no doubt that we have improved the situation for renting in Ireland very considerably since the 2004 legislation, the Residential Tenancies Act. What is very difficult at the moment and what threshold as an organisation is facing on a day-by-day basis are very severe increases in rents, particularly at the lower end of the market. It's important to realise that about 35 to 40% of the market in Ireland, the private rented market, is actually paid for by the state through the rent supplement system. And we have a scenario at the moment where the rent supplement system just does not keep pace in reality with rents. And we are seeing very significant increases in homelessness. Now, I agree with Peter in terms of sort of inward investment and the Googles of this world and all the rest rest of it. But we've got to recognise that renting and the rental sector is comprised of a significant number of different types of people. One of the difficulties we have with the legislation is that the security of tenure, which is up to 4 years under the RTA, is undermined by a failure to have legislation that limits the extent of rent increases to some reasonable level, which is one of the reasons why Threshold has championed new legislation around what we call rent certainty. So in other words, if you're in a rental scenario, you know that there's going to be a certainty of rental increases over a period of time. So we have a long way to go in this country in turning the rental sector into something that people would consider living in for 10 to 20 years. Now, I think...
Who's that?
Sorry. It's Louise. It's interesting you say that because that's exactly what the Labour Party is saying in the UK. Ed Miliband has announced that if he wins the general election next year, one of the things he's going to look at is controlling rent increases. Because there's a, again, there's a, because the percentage of home ownership in this country has fallen and more people are reliant on renting, there's a lot of fear, like as you were describing, that rents just go up and they've gone up quite considerably more than the wages. And so what you're saying is exactly what Miliband has proposed in this country.
Do you think that's a good idea, Sheila?
Yeah, I do. I think that there is such a disparity between owning and renting, and renting will suit a lot of people if it can be brought up to be a kind of a reasonably good level. And there's a broad-scale economic study, the big one from Stanford, says that of all the possible government interventions that you can have, if you can even up the rental sector and the buyer sector in terms of government supports, then that will benefit the widest range of stakeholders. Now, that's all other things being equal, and obviously all other things are never equal. And we do have a propensity to want to buy houses. There is a bigger cultural wish for it here. But if the rental sector were made more attractive, Peter's right, a lot of people would like to rent. But I think one of the difficulties with the wider range of proposals in that Construction 2020 report, there is some very good stuff in there, but there's very little stick. It's all carrot and no stick. There are a lot of incentives. There's a lot of good work on transparency. But there's no kind of effort to look at the idea that there's a lot of underdeveloped urban land and urban sites. Like, if you introduced these incentives in conjunction with a site value tax, for example, on underdeveloped sites, that might also encourage the supply side.
Peter Stafford.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what Construction 2020 did was it introduced a series of reforms rather than a series of stimuluses. Mm. And I think it was the stimulus we were looking for. We were hoping that Construction 2020 was going to be the thing which would resolve that supply-demand problem we've got going on. It doesn't, but it introduces some quite good reforms. Notably, I think what is really interesting is the creation of this high-level working group on finance, which will be looking at issues to do with availability of mortgages and all the rest of it. But there's a task to be done, which again is in Construction 2020, which is this annual breakdown of projected supply of housing against projected demand and actions to address potential mismatches. And I think that's a really useful way of being able to undertake quite short-term, quite time-limited, focused solutions to market failure. One problem we've had in the past is that we retrospectively introduce bits of legislation to cope with problems which have emerged. Then when the economy shifts, that legislation doesn't work, so we have to patch it up and we patch it up and patch it up. So then we end in the middle of a crisis like we have now with a series of bits of legislation all over the place which don't look at property in its holistic sense. So, for example, if we just look at, say, the taxation of property, we tax property before it's built because we charge development levies by local authorities. There's Part 5 requirements, there's capital gains tax on development land. We tax property while it's built because we impose VAT. We tax property when it's bought and sold because we charge stamp duty. And we tax property when it's occupied through a local property tax. At no point in the introduction of all of those taxes was the holistic life cycle of a property looked at to see how we tax it properly. And I think if Construction 2020 can do anything, it will be to look in a meaningful way at the entire life cycle, to look at the entire built environment, and to recognise that we're talking about supplying a market, but of quality accommodation, of the scale and of the type in the places that people want it, but also of the type of tenure that people want too.
Okay, we've quite a few texts coming in. I'll read some of them in a moment, but Aideen, you want it in there.
Yeah, just 2 points. And one in relation to a point that Louise made about, you know, properties being bought in London and who was buying them. And then Peter said we don't have enough information in Ireland on that same issue. I was struck by a presentation I saw by NAMA, or I was given by NAMA recently, that identified that quite a lot of the properties in Dublin in particular are being bought from outside of the country by funds coming in from the US and the UK. And I think there's a real issue there for Irish people about the fact that they did not benefit from the economic crisis. And you know, there's serious questions to be asked about that.
We bought a lot of property overseas as well, Aideen, as
we,
a country.
We did.
Mean, there was, you know, a lot of that, I mean, went both
Sheila,
ways. I didn't,
of,
but a lot of people did.
A lot of it does. But yeah. I think there are a lot of people in this country who would be quite horrified to see the prices at which
absolutely
properties are being sold to, you know, I mean, I hate to use the word, you know, and I'm not going to, because, you know, but people who come in off the plane and are sweeping in and buying
as
significant amounts of property
as Irish
in this country,
people did, yeah, all as, over Eastern,
you know,
Europe and Spain.
A lot of people are going to be paying the price for this economic crisis for the next God knows how many decades.
Absolutely.
And I don't think they want to see, at a time when we're dealing with incredible, you know, increases in the number of people who are homeless, large volumes of property, you know, going off out of commission. But I mean, that's just a side issue, and it just occurred to me when Peter was making that point that we don't have that information. We do have some of that information. Just in terms of the money issue, I mean, as a member of the Finance Committee, the Joint Rocks Finance Committee, we have obviously interviewed numbers of the banks over the last number of months, and it's been quite clear that the mainstream commercial banks do not want to lend to the construction sector because, quite honestly, a lot of them are carrying the legacy of bankruptcy and the legacy of significant defaults on loans. So there's a real issue there for government as to how we get money into the construction sector. And ironically, I was very delighted to see that Part 5 has clearly been retained. Now, some of your listeners may not know what Part 5 is, but it's a provision in the Planning and Development Act 2000, whereby developments of over a certain size, 20% of them are given over to social and affordable housing. I actually see a great opportunity there for the construction sector, who are having a very difficult time in accessing finance, to lever their Part 5, the government's Part 5 commitments, to actually get money available to them. In other words, the value of pre-sales, effectively, the government will be giving a guarantee effectively to the construction sector through Part 5. And I think that could work very, very, very effectively. But I agree completely with Peter. The high-level working group on finance and how that's going to come about is critical. Because if we don't get the construction sector properly financed, we will not be able to deal with the supply issue.
Louise, is there too much emphasis on countries, whether it's Ireland or the UK, putting so much emphasis on the property industry, the construction industry, and the future of this country in particular, some people say, seems to depend on pushing up property prices?
Well, to be fair, at the boom, you know, far too much of the Irish economy was construction. It was very similar to Spain. But on the other hand, it is part, you know, even in a more normal economy, it is a significant part of the economy and many people work in it. So I don't think so. And it also clearly has an effect on consumer spending, and consumption is sort of 60 to 70% of an economy. So, you know, unless people feel a little bit more comfortable with their main asset, their property, they're not going to go out and spend and consume, which is what, you know, an economy needs. So I don't think too much attention is focused on it. And also, clearly, you need housing to be built, because housing is a basic human need. So I think it is a very important thing. But what struck me as a big surprise from what I'm hearing is I hadn't realised that Ireland had a supply problem. You know, from the outside, we look in and we see all these photographs of half-built estates and, you know, completely empty houses. I assumed that the oversupply was the problem in Ireland, not undersupply.
But they're not in the areas where people want to live. Isn't that the basic problem, Peter?
Yeah, that's it. It also shows the speed at which the market moves as well, that a conversation becomes normality, that people assume we have too many houses and the ghost estates have become the emblem of Ireland. But the market moves very, very quickly. And we've had 6 years of not supplying the market at all. We would need in the region of about 30,000 houses to be built across Ireland each year. At the peak, we built 90,000. But at the moment, we're going to build six or seven. So what what we have to understand, and people are afraid, I think, of why on earth would Ireland, of all of the countries in the world, want to stimulate house building? In order to reach normality, we'll have to double the number of houses we built this year and double it again and maintain that level of output for the medium term. That's a huge task. At the same time, we have a construction industry, we heard earlier, which was twice the size it should have been for European standards. It's now half the size. So again, we need to, if we to get to the European levels of normality for a construction industry that serves the economy, we have to double output. And in a period of very, very tight finances and very limited amount of investment opportunities, that's a major, major struggle. So, you know, we shouldn't think of stimulating housing activity for the sake of it. We're not building houses for you know, a laugh. We're building them because there's a need. How do we know there's a need? Because we have homelessness, because we have too many people chasing houses. We have now the spectre of students thinking they can't afford to go to university in Dublin because they can't afford rent because we haven't built any student accommodation.
And then there's the spectre of repossessions.
And there's all these are the symptoms of a very, very dysfunctional market. And I think there is always a concern in Ireland that we're going to end up in a property bubble or we're going to overshoot the market. We need to do two things. We need to find out what a sustainable level of output that we need. We need to find measures about how to get there. And then we need to monitor it very, very, very closely indeed, so that we need to know all of the people who are involved in the construction and property sector need to have the data at their fingertips so that we don't get into the world of anecdote and we don't overshoot the market. We have an evidence-based property market.
Sheila, I'll put a point to you that's texted in from Frank in Dublin. He says, housing is a basic human right. Why doesn't the government consider imposing a levy on all workers, including property owners, to fund a housing scheme for everyone? I'm suggesting that most people would be happy with access to good quality housing at a much lower cost than standard mortgages.
Water is a basic human right as well. Lots of things are in the UDHR which are not necessarily free. But the government should be, it's part of the job of governing, and I guess they are, that is part of the aim of Horizon 2020, is to make housing available. Nobody should be homeless.
You don't think putting a levy is a good idea?
Well, it doesn't matter whether you call it a levy or you don't. Mm. If you introduce a scheme like this where we're subsidising people, that comes from your taxes one way or another. So whether it's a levy on every worker or whether it's gathered from the VAT paid by everybody, students and homeless people and everybody else, if the government are subsidising something, we are paying for it, whether you call it a hypothecated or ring-fenced levy or not. But Peter is making very good sense there, especially when he's talking about the entire built environment and the fact that we need more data to plan this thing properly, because it's not just the tax problems, and there are tax issues for the whole life cycle of a house. There are tax subsidies also cost you. They'd cost somebody else. They cost other choices that people might make. But also, where are you building the houses? What income level of people are going in? What locations? Because you need to think then about public transport. You need to think about resources. And those all feed into the construction. It's not simply houses. So, like, Peter's entirely right there that a kind of a holistic economic and social approach needs to be taken.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, I think that's true. And one of the really good pieces, again, in Construction 2020 is the need to address early infrastructural deficits and to make sure that the infrastructure is in place, to make sure that developments, when they take place, are joined up, and a particular focus on the type and size of property, especially how properties differ in urban areas and rural areas, because needs change. What we have, again, at the moment is this system, such as it is, of development contributions, where local authorities charge a levy based on how much they think connecting development to infrastructure is going to cost. That's an upfront cost. And again, that adds to the cost of a new property, which is a very unfair way of subsidising infrastructure for the entire community. Mm-hmm. So it's that idea of taking a step back, and there's nothing better than a crisis as an opportunity to take a step back and say, what kind of houses do we want people to live in? Where are they, and how are they connected, and how are we going to pay for them? The concept of a levy to pay for houses is surely what we pay tax for in any case, but I think the point is the correct one. If we're going to subsidise housing, or we're going to make housing available, just in the same way we make lots of services available, the subsidy has to come from the widest possible share of the community.
Louise, did you want in there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm listening to this debate, and clearly one of the problems is funding. So is the financial system of Ireland is not strong enough to fund either construction or people's mortgages. Well, I was wondering if there's alternative sources of funding, because that's one of the big growth areas in Europe, that we rely less on the banking system when we're looking at private equity, all different types of finding funding from somewhere else. I mean, is that something the government is engaging in? You know, not necessarily just relying on local Irish banks.
That's your point, isn't it, Aideen, that you were making earlier?
There's a number of issues out there that are actually quite exciting in terms of what the government are thinking about, I mean, looking at in terms of how funding would be sourced. And there's no doubt about it, we need to think outside the box. One of the issues that we have in Ireland is that we have a very traditional model of finance, and we need to move away from that. And for example, one of the things that we could do that was done in the UK, for example, which I know Louise would be very familiar with, is using the asset basis of local authorities. In other words, the housing that local authorities own, and using them to lever finance. Now, there's evidence that the international pension funds are quite willing to invest in, say, local authorities and their housing supplies because they're, they've been pretty damaged by the international financial crisis. They're now happy with returns of 2, 3 and 4% over a 40 to 50 year period. So there are new ways that we can fund housing. And I think our local authorities and their housing stock is something that we really need to consider as an exciting way of moving this debate forward in terms of local authorities getting into the business of development. You know, that they should be building developments that can cross subsidise each other. In other words, building some for private ownership, some for social ownership, and some for just for rental. So I think that's something that I know that government are willing to consider. Can I just throw something into the mix here? We spent a lot of time talking about sort of the laws of supply and demand, and what if we do this? Will it, and you know, we don't have supply. Would a scheme to help first-time house buyers, cause a difficulty in relation to supply? I mean, we're going to have a problem with supply for the next period, and we're going to have, on the face of it at least anyway, increase in house prices. And I think we are going to have to face up to the reality, and the reality is we may have to look at ways to actually make sure that the prices of housing do not, just because we find ourselves in this very, very difficult situation, that the prices of housing are not just left entirely to market forces. To give a very simple analogy, if you've got one loaf of bread and 10 people looking for it, do you let the seller of the loaf of bread charge whatever they want to charge? I mean, certainly in the past, we have at certain periods in Irish housing history had things like certificate of reasonable value, and I know it's been mooted in other circles, that you actually come to a point, I suppose you can call it a form of price control if you want, where the price that's being charged for the product, irrespective of the demand for that product, has to relate in some way to the cost of the production of that product. We cannot let a situation go forward for the next number of years until we get the supply under control, where people are just simply faced with higher and higher and higher costs of housing.
Peter, what do you think of that?
I think we could call it price control, and I think the Supreme Court would definitely call it price control. I think we just need to be very, very careful that we don't invent a new programme which will end up in huge amount of litigation. We have a problem which is today. And for example, the cost of infrastructure, the cost of connecting to infrastructure, the cost of planning, local authority bureaucracy is pushing up the price of houses enormously. So we can hear anecdotes, for example, in Dunleary Rathdown, where the levies, development levies and local infrastructure levies and so on, can add about €55,000 to the price of an apartment. So one thing we could do is reduce the price of apartments by €55,000 by having a time-limited removal
But to be fair, Peter, the Construction 2020 programme talks about lowering development levies. So, and I think you've already accepted that that's a positive aspect of
it. Oh, it is. That's a really good example of how we can do something which is time-limited to get us across this particular concern without creating a problem which might manifest itself in another crisis a couple of years later.
Louise? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of price controls always sounds incredibly tempting, But experience has shown time and time again in the world that if you do a price control, if you limit the price, then supply falls. It is only a very short-term measure that can be extremely damaging in the long term. So I know politicians love it. You know, Miliband's been using it here in the UK. But, you know, economic theory tells you, and this is, and it's been borne out time and time again, if you limit pricing, you limit supply, you do exactly what you don't want to do. What you want to do is increase supply, not decrease supply.
And I think then what we've got to look at, it, and it's the point that we were making earlier, is about the new supply of financing. And I think pension funds, private pension funds, are a great opportunity. As Aideen said, they're looking to invest, they're looking for returns, they're looking for stable returns. In some countries, there is a social dividend which is compulsory for pension funds. They have to invest part of their funds in social works. I think in Ireland, we could define that as a social housing, a new revenue stream. But what's also interesting in you is the concept of the real estate investment trusts, the REITs, which are coming into the market as a vehicle for channeling new investment in the Irish real, the Irish residential REIT was floated on the Irish Stock Exchange in April. They're looking to raise €200 million to invest in residential property. Apparently, they've already found 338 units, four apartment blocks in Dublin, spent €42 million. That's €42 million of new money. We have people, we have individuals who are investing in individual properties, which is fine. A real estate investment trust is an opportunity for people to invest in the trust, which invests in property. I think what we're going to have to do in the short term is to find all of the different sources of financing we can get and bring it into the market so that we can get the supply moving. I think when we have queues and when we have problems, it's the financing of supplies issue.
Okay,
just on that very quickly. I mean, Peter made a very good point earlier, and I think it's a very important aspect of Construction 2020, and that is that from now on there will be a legislative basis in terms of determining, you know, the interplay between the spatial strategy and the construction strategy. We will be moving away very, very significantly from the build them and they will come attitude of the Celtic Tiger years. And I think that's very, very important that if we are going to talk about sustainable construction going forward, we must have a construction policy that, no disrespect to, you know, to anybody, doesn't relate to how loudly the Construction Industry Federation happened to shout or how loudly, you know, anybody happens to shout, that it's based on real data and what resources are there. I mean, during the Celtic Tiger years, we had the whole inner city with hospitals, schools, infrastructure, and yet we were building, you know, 80 kilometres down the road in Gorey and Arklow. I mean, so we've got to get away from that. And I think that's one of the very exciting aspects of the Construction 2020
policy. Can I have just one point? One of the problems that we have in the UK is that ministerially, we don't really have one person in charge. I think what we could really do with is a housing minister. Is that, do you have that in Ireland? Do you have one person or is it sort of split? Because, you know, you have sort of the local authorities, it's all split into various different departments. And what's being proposed in the UK is one housing minister to sort this mess out.
Well, there is a housing minister, but she doesn't. She is more social housing. And
yeah, we have a housing minister, and we still have that problem. The creation of a housing minister doesn't change that. Mm-hmm. What we need, I think, is some kind of construction czar, somebody who is able within government and within all of the different sectors to pull together all of the different parts of industry, whether it's public procurement or whether it's the provision of social housing, and not necessarily a ministerial role, because I think, again, in the UK, the experience has been that construction ministers tend to move around very, very quickly. We need somebody there who is at the heart of government to be able to coordinate this.
Okay. Now, I have to argue against that. I think Janet O'Sullivan has been an excellent minister, and I think she's pulling together an awful lot of things. I mean, there's a lot going on under the surface. For example, the ESRI at the moment are currently doing exactly what you're saying, Peter, putting together a proper spatial strategy and with you know, the construction policy overlying that. So, you know, I think, you know, we have a minister there who's doing that job. Probably what you probably don't realise, Louise, is that we have a very strong local authority sector in this country that has a kind of a different role from the UK local authority sector.
We're almost out of time, and I do want to read out some tweets. Tax expert, I hear you, and I'll read you out in a moment. But first, I want to hear from our regular columnist, the author and comedian comedian Colm O'Regan. He's been mulling over this announcement about a Help to Buy plan, but he's worried that it may not quite be as safe as houses.
I'm over it now. No, honestly, it's fine. The whole buying a house at the wrong time. We all make mistakes, right? Negative equity? Ah, what harm. I live here. I like it. The fact that in 2012 someone bought a house on our road for 4 shillings, 8 old pennies and some loose buttons when I paid multiples of that? Ah, water off a duck's back. Good luck to them. No, seriously, I'm fine. Now, can we talk about something else other than property? That twitch in my eye that I've had since 2008 is coming back. I still feel a bit of a mug, so as a result, don't come to me looking for advice on how to buy a house more easily. It was very easy for me to buy my house. Too easy. In fact, the bank wanted to give us more money. Thankfully, we turned them down. Against that backdrop, I, completely unfairly, am dead set against making it easier for anyone to buy a house ever again. That's not workable either, of course. Something needs to be done about the housing market, but I would like to see it underpinned by two basic principles. Number one, that the people in the country have a right to have some sort of decent place to live. Not necessarily own, just live. And to have some security of tenure. And the second principle, that the place would be built properly. Who among us has visited other countries and stayed in basic family apartments and thought bitterly, and when you think of what they built back home? Who hasn't walked past an urban playground in even gritty areas of foreign cities and thought, where's our playground? Let's assume that these principles are cherished and the government still thinks it's necessary to support some taxpayers with other taxpayers' money. All I'm asking is if they just do a bit of what-ifing. Put a slide into the PowerPoint presentation entitled Law of Unintended Consequences, or What Happens When a Government Intervenes in the Market for the Best of Reasons. Remember the SSIAs? They were in response to our low savings rate. A lot of us took them out around 2000. Good solid country people wanting to convince our parents we weren't flighty. Then all the lovely money matured around the same time, in the middle of the last decade. Throw in a few more inflationary factors and boom goes the neighbourhood. And a final point. This 95% guarantee, why so high? If a house buyer can't muster 20, 15 or even 10% of the price of a house as a deposit, are we really sure they have enough money to maintain the mortgage when ECB interest rates go up to 4%, as they surely must do at some stage? All I'm saying is I hope the government thought it through. And if they think they've thought it through, give it another think. I don't think the negative equity twitch in my eye could take another boom and bust.
And that was Colm O'Regan. Colm, thanks very much indeed. Let me just read you some texts before we finish. Well, we've another couple of minutes left. JC says a state guarantee for mortgages will raise state borrowing costs. Ratings agencies will quickly recognise the potential liabilities and react. Bridget in Kilkenny, deja vu government and chocolate oven gloves. Tommy in Wicklow says one of your contributors said that the cash buyers are people who made the money during the Celtic Tiger. Well, they're doing nothing illegal. And in my view, they were the smart people who didn't go mad and they're now getting the benefits. Den in Dublin 1 says this idea is not a government guarantee, it's a taxpayer's guarantee. No more gambling with taxpayers' money. John in Blarney says while the insolvency process is a disaster, I think we can't lose sight of our new best friend in a rising property market known as bankruptcy. And Paddy in Dublin says why not tell the developers use it or lose it. And Aideen, one for you perhaps in relation to the rent increases, the tax expert has tweeted broaden the remit of the tenancy board to include approving rent increases subject to the increase in rent not exceeding the income growth of the tenant.
Well, you know, that would have, dare I say, and I don't want to get into a very complicated argument, that would have constitutional implications. You can't make a landlord's return subject to a tenant's ability to pay. That, unfortunately, you know, we'd all love it to be so, but it isn't the case. The Commission on the Private Rental Sector back in 2000 did not rule out the idea of more and better rent certainty and said it was something that could be revisited in the light of experience. And I think we have had that experience and we do need to revisit it. I don't believe it would be unconstitutional to look again at the idea of rent increases based on an independent index that is independent of the landlord and the tenant and is subject to a landlord's genuine right to have a return on their investment, which they are, of course, obviously entitled to have.
Sheila, final word from you on all of this. Would you agree with Colm O'Regan if the government's thinking about this, maybe have another think?
On the particular flyer, of this guarantee, obviously. There's better stuff, like Aideen's entirely right, there's better stuff in the Construction 2020 report, but there's one thing missing from it. It covers stuff on the legal framework and on information, there's good stuff on transparency. It needs more on standards and regulation, particularly around the rental sector. It needs to look a little at tax and subsidies. But there are no sticks in it. It doesn't penalise kind of antisocial speculation. This idle land that should be built on in areas where it should be built, where it pays people better to just sit back and wait. Really, there should need to be kind of reverse incentives there, like a site value tax to encourage that kind of building.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, there are kind of use it or lose it provisions within Construction 2020. And again, I think this is something we're going to see more of as the new planning bill comes into play. The government is going to produce a new national spatial and development plan. I think we're going to see a lot of the sticks coming out as we go through. Again, Construction 2020 was intended to be a stimulus package to get things moving. It is by its very nature a document of carrots.
Okay, thank you all very much indeed. Peter Stafford, Sheila Killian, Aideen Hayden and Louise Cooper. Just to let you know, Late Debate will be here with a special edition of the programme on Sunday night at 10 o'clock with the latest, of course, from the European election count. So join us for that if you can. Usual time, 10 o'clock. Until then, from all the team, enjoy your weekend.
The Late Debate with Audrey Carvel was produced by Peter Hegarty. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. Research was by Barry Lenehan and sound supervision tonight was by Kieran Dunn.